Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. Mary Steves here alongside our fearless leader, Dr. Tim Elmore.
Mary, I do have two fears, but we don't need to bring them up now.
Okay, we won't bring those up today. Tim, here at Growing Leaders, we talk a lot about teams. And I know that even as a young professional, I feel like every day I'm understanding the importance of a great team, which is why I'm really excited for this conversation that we are going to have today about what makes a great team great. And today we invite to the conversation Don Yeager, an expert on the topic. As some of you may or may not know, Don is an award-winning keynote speaker, business leadership coach, and 9-time New York Times bestselling author. On top of that, he's a longtime associate editor for Sports Illustrated. Don, you've had quite the career. So Tim, why don't you officially introduce Don to our listeners?
Great. Thanks, Mary. Don, we're glad to have you with us. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tim. It's an honor. Obviously, I'm a big fan, so I'm grateful.
Well, it's mutual. For the listeners, Don and I struck up a friendship some years ago, and of course, I have loved reading after him, and I love sports too, so it's just a double win for me. Don, I'd like to talk to you about this idea of teams. I'm sure every single person listening is either a part of a team or they're leading a team, and they have learned, probably through the school of hard knocks, that chemistry and just making teams work is way more than just being a group of people together. So I'd like to kick off the conversation by just having you share what drove you to write on this topic.
Sure, Tim. It was actually, I retired from Sports Illustrated 8 years ago. I took an early retirement package that they offered, and I set out to start doing speeches around lessons I'd learned from high performers. What were some of the things that I'd, you know, when I had a chance to live with Walter Payton and write his biography while he was dying, to work on with Michael Orr, the kid from The Blind Side, on telling his actual story. One by one, I was learning these great lessons in high performance, and so that was the speech that I was giving over and over again. What do you learn from great winners? And then about 5 years ago, an executive at Microsoft pulled me aside and said, you know what, we love that, but what we want to know is why can some teams do it? Look at the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, you know, you don't have to like the Cardinals. You don't have to like baseball. But you ought to want to know, why can some team be that consistently great?
Yeah.
The San Antonio Spurs, the New England Patriots, UConn women's basketball. You can hate them all, but you should want to study them. And so I took that as my jumping off point. And over the course of 5 years, I sat down with 110 of these team builders to ask them, how do you do it? What do you do that creates a sustainably top-line franchise or organization, and then another dozen business leaders who run great, Gary Kelly from Southwest Airlines, and others sat down with to talk to me about how you do it in business. And the lessons are universal, and that's the best part about it.
Yeah, that's so cool. So in light of those 122 interviews that you did, I'd love, just out of curiosity, what were some of your favorite interviews? Did any stand out, even if it wasn't the content, it was the experience with the person?
Well, yes. Mike Krzyzewski at Duke is one of my favorites. I enjoy time in his presence. I enjoy his mind for leadership. Yeah. I enjoy the idea that here's this guy, you know, approaching 70, right?
Yeah.
Coaching 19-year-olds and doing it year after year. At the highest level, I mean, how do you break through that generation gap, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like multiple generation gaps you got to fight through.
And so
sitting at the foot of Coach K and just learning from him has to rank among the best. And he played a big piece in the way this book came together and was developed for me by opening up enough doors and creating enough time to sit and talk about the power of great leadership.
That's cool. You know, I was just thinking about Coach K when you were talking. I'll never forget hearing him speak a few years ago. It was after the 2012 Olympics. And Don, he talked about coaching that team with LeBron and Kobe and others. And he said, admittedly, he felt the gap. You know, he felt like, number one, these guys are still 20-somethings. But number two, he felt like, what do I have to say to them? They're now not college students trying to keep their scholarship. They're richer than he is. And you know what he said that just struck me, and I wrote it down? He said, I let them have ownership. He said, I talked to them one-on-one, ahead of time. I said, before our first team meeting, I want you to weigh in. I'm going to ask you, what do you think we need to do for each other? And then he let them kind of, you know, spark the meeting. And so ownership came from the team, not the leader kind of barking out some order. He said that made all the difference in the world because you had a lot of ego in that room and he let it blend. So that's quite powerful. It doesn't surprise me that Coach K was one of your favorites. Yeah. That's fun.
Two quick sidebars off of that. One, you know, what's interesting when he talks about that is that he shares, you know, there's, and you hit on the lesson already, that, you know, every team requires you to lead a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
So your leadership has to be in development always. And so his point was that at Duke, he can lead a certain way, and mm-hmm. it works.
Yeah.
But when then asked to coach USA basketball, he had a wholly yeah. different experience because of what he was being asked to lead and who he was being asked to lead. The second thing is that prior to those 2012 games, there was this moment that occurred that was a game changer for that team and for all of USA basketball. And it was when he talks about great teams feel a sense of purpose. They don't just talk about it. They don't just look at pictures. They feel it.
Yeah.
And he created this feel it moment. Yeah. That's his job. He says, as a leader, is to create these moments when people feel who they're in service of and why it matters. And prior to those games, he took the team to Arlington National Cemetery.
Wow.
And while they were there, Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, walked our players through the cemetery, and he told them who was buried there. He gave them a history lesson on what it meant to protect America.
Interesting.
And then he says, come with me, and he takes them over to Section 60, which is the freshest graves at Arlington. Mm. And our players, several of whom I interviewed after this, told me that they were walking by these headstones with birth dates that,
yep.
that showed that the person lost there was younger than them.
Yes. Yeah.
They were seeing hometowns that were familiar.
Yeah.
And suddenly as they're standing there, Coach Krzyzewski notices a young man standing about 100 feet away amongst a group of graves. And this young man is dressed in civilian clothes, but he's got a crew cut. So Coach K assumes he's a member of the military.
Yeah.
And he's standing there with a backpack over his shoulders, and he's reaching in the backpack, pulling out pictures and laying them down at grave sites. And Coach K walks over. And he said, sir, you know, my name is Mike Krzyzewski. I'm the head men's basketball coach of our Olympic team. And is there any way you would tell me what you're doing here today? And the young man said, yeah, coach, I know who you are. He said, this, and he points to this collection of graves. He said, this was my team.
Mm.
And we had a mission, and it didn't go as planned. And,
wow.
And these are pictures of me and them in better days.
Huh.
And Coach K asked the young man to come over and talk to our player,
yeah.
and he did. And over the course of the next 5 minutes, this young man starts talking about what it means to really be a teammate.
Wow.
What does it mean to care about the guy next to you more than you care about yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
He gets into survivor's guilt. You know, he wasn't there that day, and he wished he had been.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he turns around, he starts crying, he walks away. And Mike Krzyzewski said that was the moment when that team went off the chart.
Yeah.
Because they realized they were part of something bigger than themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, when you start thinking about what it takes to build a great team, he argues great teams are built around a sense of purpose, a why, and that in his mind, that why has to be felt. It can't just be talked about. It can't just be a memo. It can't be a poster on a wall. The why has to be felt. And when the great teams come together and feel it, they are set to do extraordinary things for long periods of time.
That makes total sense. So it's not just mental gymnastics. I know the plays, the X's and O's. It's a deep feeling inside. That totally, that totally makes sense.
Well, changes the way I work every day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we need that. So I want to go a little deeper here. Whetter appetite. You just shared one great story. But are there any others that stand out that maybe would be helpful and relevant for our listeners today? What are some other things that make teams great that came up from your work?
You know, another one, again, so one of the things I loved about this project was I was just asking these great team builders, share with me, what is it that allowed you to be successful? And different ones had different answers. Many of the answers were the same. But each one I asked them to challenge me. I challenged them with a story. And another one that came up was the idea that great teams run better huddles than their opponents, right? That sounds really crazy because the why concept is very, it's big picture, right? It's emotional. Is it? Huddles seem very tactical, but they are. And so the story that came up was the University of Michigan national championship team where Chris Webber called the timeout.
Yeah.
And everybody remembers it. If you're a sports fan, you know, the team had no timeouts left.
Yeah.
He is trapped along the sidelines and he calls a timeout. It costs his team the national championship. And everybody wanted to know what happened. And when you look at it, here's exactly what happened. See, there was a huddle that occurred just 60 seconds earlier in which the head coach looked all of his players in the eye at Michigan and said, "We don't have any timeouts. Has everybody got it?" And everybody nodded. But one of the players, a third-string point guard who wasn't going to be involved in the play, he wasn't listening because the huddle didn't affect him because he didn't think mm-hmm. He wasn't going to be in that play. So yeah. Who cared whether he was involved or not? In fact, if you watch the video, he's waving at a girl in the crowd while the coach is imparting this very important information. Well, Chris Webber gets trapped along the sidelines, and that third-string point guard yells, "Call timeout."
Oh, my gosh.
And Chris Webber does it because the guy was disengaged in a huddle. And so as a lesson, a great team looks at a huddle, a meeting, as a strategic advantage that we need to treat like among the most important minutes of our day. And the truth is, most of us don't do that, right? Most of us, we dread meetings, and we come to meetings looking forward to checking our Facebook or texting people during the meeting and catching up on email under the table. And the truth is, it's in those moments where what we're really doing is we're waving at a girl in the crowd.
Yeah, that's right.
And the important stuff is probably being discussed in the room, and we're going to leave the meeting. And we might go out there and call timeout when it's not required.
Yeah.
Great teams understand the value of those moments that we have together, and they treat them with so much respect that it gives them a strategic advantage over their opponents.
Yeah. Again, powerful, but but counterintuitional. I mean, I don't think, you know, we typically think that. But I'm reminded now of being with coaches at the University of North Carolina where they said something similar. They even said the practice time is as important as the game. In fact, practice is tough. They try to make it tougher there so that the game is as a piece of cake. You know, I made it through my time with my teammates. So that's outstanding, absolutely outstanding. Well, Don, in your book, Great Teams, you also highlight some very practical application. Not that this isn't practical, but what advice do you now give to organizations for them to practice? Like, what do we pull, even if we're not leading a sports team, you say, well, that's applicable right here and now for your org?
Well, I think one of the first things that, you know, and this feeds so much into what Growing Leaders is all about, what you talk about, is that the culture of your organization, that we all work in cultural organisms, right?
Yeah.
Our office place, our workplace is a culture. And most of us don't take time to identify what that is, and we certainly don't identify how, if it needs to be changed, how we go about doing it. And so if you can create an environment where you're saying, here's what we value, because that's your culture. Your culture is what you value within your environment. It's what you celebrate. It's what people get promoted for. And if you can identify those things, it's not the five words that are on the wall or on the corporate, you know, the site that we all have to have. Your culture is what's really happening in your office place. Yeah. The great teams are they are in discussion about their culture regularly. It's not something that, you've heard the phrase, it happens by design or default. The great teams don't let it happen. The great teams don't let it happen by accident. And so what I love is these amazing organizations are so culturally aware. They talk openly about what they value. They reinforce those values by celebrating them when they occur.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things that's missed often, right? We say we want you to be a great teammate, but then the only thing we reward in our organization is when you generate more profit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think that says to them? You know, those who are working for us. It says that, by the way, being a great teammate is lip service.
Yeah.
What matters is, can I generate profit?
That's right. Yeah. I'm smiling because I'm thinking of my buddy Andy Stanley's line, "What's happening down the hall is more important than what's hanging on the wall." You know, we got the right stuff hanging on the wall, but we're all doing the other thing down the hallway. It's so, so true. Well, I love what you just said. If I can just push pause on this, culture is so, so important. And by culture, it's chemistry too. And I don't think it can be forced, but it's definitely something that great leaders just understand. Coach K does, obviously. He was creating culture by the feelings he was inducing or fostering with those USA basketball players. So that's
powerful. Our job as leaders is to change, is to shape and change culture.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There was a great story a couple of weeks ago on the front page of the sports section of the New York Times about the University of Houston football coach, Tom Herman.
Yeah.
Who came into that program a year and a half ago when they were horrid, and he turned them into a top 10 program.
Yeah.
And one of the things he started doing was on the way from the practice field or from the locker room to the game field, before every game, he stops every player and he kisses them on the cheek.
Hmm.
And this is in the macho world of college football.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And one thing really stood out to him. He learned from some of these players, it's the first time in their life that some of these young men had ever been kissed by another man, right? And that just crushed him.
Yeah.
But he said, you know what? And he argues that there are two ways we get people to do things they might not otherwise want to do. That's fear or love.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, I'll choose love every day.
Yeah.
But then to change his culture, he does the uncomfortable. He kisses them on the cheek when they don't. And he said, you know, at the beginning, they all blanched and they didn't want to do it. Now they line up.
Yeah.
They can't wait to be kissed on the cheek.
Isn't that something?
Because they know this guy means it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so that's just so powerful.
That is.
We start thinking about our job as leaders. If we want to say, I love you, how do we show it? I'm not suggesting everybody on your podcast here runs out and kisses everybody in the cheek. In your office, HR directors probably would go nuts. But what I'm suggesting is that if we say this is what we value, we got to go out and show it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great picture of that. What an incredible thing that Tom Herman did.
Yeah.
What would you say, Don, are some challenges leaders face? So everything you're describing is spot on, and I don't think anybody's listening going, nope, that's wrong. But I think a lot of them are thinking, I don't know how I'd ever do that. What are some challenges leaders are going to face when pursuing these habits of greatness with their teams?
Well, I think the greatest challenge is trying to find time to do it, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting, oh, gosh, I got to close. I got to do this. I got to close that. I got to teach this class. I got to do
this.
How am I going to make time to start changing culture or start rewarding people or start you know, making our why evident to other people? You know, the truth is, that's what really falls to us is the required effort of leadership. I mean, the idea of taking a team to Arlington, that required effort, right?
Yeah.
Mike Krzyzewski had to imagine it.
Yeah.
He had to hope it would have impact. And then he had to go out and find the time and make it happen.
Yeah,
right?
It's true.
The time that the ideas that everything we're talking about here, these are, you have to decide what am I trying to build? And if I'm trying to find greatness in what I want to be and what I want our team to be, where am I going to find the time? And, none of it happens by accident. It's all required.
Yeah.
It's all required effort.
Yeah.
And those who can do it. So the greatest challenge, Tim, to your big question, is finding time.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to get caught up in the minutiae of everything we have
to
do.
No doubt about it.
And the minutiae is how we get rewarded often in our environment.
It's true.
And so how do we find time to change that environment?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's probably going to require new habits, you know, that we wear grooves into the system of our lives to make it happen. Yeah. Don, this has been so rich. If you don't mind, I want to ask you one last question before we sign off. I love what you have shared. I'm even thinking of things I can do in application here at our organization, Growing Leaders.
You're going to start walking around kissing everybody in the cheek.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going to do it. In fact, I got people in the room right now. Yeah, they're just really looking forward to it, I can tell. this is just a fun question, kind of off the record, but what are you learning right now? Maybe more of the same, but because everything you shared has been great, but what would you say, like, right now, what are you learning? How are you growing?
So one of the things I'm learning regularly is I'm trying to become a better speaker. I love speaking. I get a chance to do it about 80 times a year right now.
Yeah.
But I just always know... I'm a storyteller, is what I am, and I want to be a better speaker. And so the way I'm doing it is what you and I encountered a couple weeks ago when we were together in Colorado.
Yeah,
if I know I've got an event where I'm speaking and another great speaker like you is on the agenda, I'm coming in a day early, or I'm staying a day late. I'm doing whatever it takes to be in the presence of others who do what I do at a really high level. And so for me, my greatest growth, and that's hard because, again, I don't want to spend any more days away from my family than anybody else. But I'm trying to grow myself, and the best way to do it, John, wouldn't you tell me that you'll never outperform your inner circle, and your job is to always be improving your inner circle. And so I'm doing it through osmosis by sitting in the back of the room and watching really amazing people stand up and shape lives. And, and I hope that by learning that, by watching the way they do it, by asking questions afterward, I'm able to be better at doing the same thing.
Awesome. Well, I tend to draw a different conclusion than you do. I think you're fantastic as a speaker, but how cool that you're still going after just improvement. I love that. Dawn, thank you. This has been rich. It's been helpful. It's been relevant. I so appreciate you carving out some time to talk to us today. It's been great.
Yeah,
Dawn, it's been a privilege.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Tim and Dawn, thank you so much for that powerful conversation. Before we dive right into practical applications, if you would like to learn more about our conversation today about what makes great teams great, Dawn's book entitled Great Teams, 16 Things High-Performing Organizations Do Differently is available wherever books are sold. In addition, to honor National Gratitude Month, Growing Leaders is saying a big thank you to the leaders of today's young adults by featuring specials on our online store. If you'd like to find out more, please visit growingleaders.com. Tim, talk to us a little bit more about a few practical steps that we can take moving forward about how to make great teams great.
Great. Absolutely, Mary. One of the things we like to do, listeners, after we have a great interview like that one with Dawn Yeager, is just to provide some very, very practical next steps or first steps maybe on the subject. I pulled several things out of that interview. I hope you did too. One was his whole notion about that culture is something you feel, not just talk about or hang on the wall. And I specifically thought in my mind about something I learned years ago from a mentor where we were talking about culture, and I learned that great leaders create a sense, a feeling of three realities. One is a sense of destiny. Two, a sense of family. And three, a militant spirit. And I think that came out in our conversation with Dawn, but think about it for a minute. Great leaders create a sense of destiny. The entire team feels like we're supposed to do this. This is bigger than just a handful of people putting their talents together. There's a sense of we must get this done. And then sense of family. I think especially today with a large, large millennial generation that's now the largest part of the workforce, and then Generation Z coming right behind them, they long for a family sense. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Work-life balance has been replaced by work-life blending. They want to feel like I'm with my friends and family and I'm having fun as I do my work. So a sense of family. And then thirdly, a militant spirit. That whole sense that we will do whatever it takes to get the job done. So it didn't connote violence. It just means we're going to go after this destiny that we think we have with everything that we've got inside. So I think that creates culture. If your team has a sense of destiny, a sense of family, and a militant spirit, you're probably going to make great progress every single year you enter your tasks. I love Dawn's comment about generations. I don't know if you caught it, but we are clearly in a different day where older people are working longer, way past 65, and then the young are entering the workforce, creating three and four generations working together, collaborating, hopefully, at the same time. And that's just a nut we're going to have to learn to crack. Leaders are going to have to figure out, how do I connect with three or four generations who might not share the same values intrinsically or the same mode of communication intrinsically or even the same life goals outside of work? How do I somehow bring them together? And I believe you do that through sense of destiny, sense of family, militant spirit. I think if everybody feels that, no matter how old they are, they feel like they're ready to make a sacrifice for the bigger cause. But I love the fact that Dawn said culture is what you value. I'd like to encourage you to think about that. If you have multiple generations, but they are saying we overlap on this value, I think we can prove that there can be incredible collaboration. we're not a gigantic team at Growing Leaders, but we've got people in their 20s, people in their, this year we had people in their teens, people in their 20s, people in their 30s, and people in their 50s.
So, I wonder who that is.
I don't know who that is, but I'm just in theory.
Right.
We come together, not in our style of music or whatever, it's we all value equipping the emerging generation, and that's what drives us in this building. So one last thought. I loved Don's quote of Tom Coach Herman at University of Houston, that people are motivated by one of two things, fear or love. You can either intimidate them until they're scared not to obey, or you can love them until they want to go the extra mile. And I think, I love his conclusion, I'll choose love every time. And that's not a syrupy thing, it's not a romantic thing, but there he is kissing his football players every Saturday, and this non-Big Five conference team is one of the top 10 teams in the country. So just absolutely huge. So, Mary, I'm going to turn it back over to you, but how fun to have this conversation with Don and learn so much from the stories he told today.
That really was. Tim, thank you so much. And I appreciate the practical steps and the insight that you shared. That just allows that really powerful conversation that we just had with Don really to come to life. So thank you for joining us today on the Growing Leaders podcast, and we will see you next time.